What's up, everyone? It's Mark Mageau, and you're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chevrolet. This month is Upgrader Month at Lakewood Chev. Upgrade to a new Chevrolet with new safety and technology features, lower maintenance for the same or better payment. That's Lakewood Chevrolet. Marc-Andre Fleury, we just saw him in here on Friday night, played extremely well, likely the reason the Penguins ended up winning that game in a shootout. Where do you think he ends up next season?
Oh, I've seen a lot of speculation about Las Vegas. Obviously, Nick Kiprios, who is as plugged in as they come, has speculated that around the trade deadline, that was a destination for Fleury or a potential destination. Obviously, there's the no-move clause in his contract, so he controls that in terms of whether he's willing to go there. I will say that I see style-wise a fit in what the way Marc-Andre Fleury plays, and I should couch that. He has become a more conservative goalie in his end zone play. His tactical approach has shifted over the past 3 years under Mike Bales. He's a lot more comfortable moving in and off of his post, where he used to chase plays outside of his post, and that's why we used to see all those, you know, sort of groaner goals at key times where the pucks were banked off of him because he just wasn't comfortable sort of stealing his post, so he played outside of him. So I think his game is a lot better, more sound technically since Mike Bales arrived in Pittsburgh over the past few years. But he's still off the rush. You saw it in Edmonton. I mean, he's so explosive, and he has the ability to take more ice and drift back off the rush and get across and make athletic desperate saves. And those are certainly skill sets and style approaches that the goaltending coach and then goaltending advisor in Las Vegas, Dave Pryor, used to be with the Washington Capitals, has looked for in the goalies that he had when he was with the Capitals. So definitely there's a fit there. I'd be honest, the one fit that, you know, I've kind of heard from several places now, or several different sources, including some goalie coaches around the NHL have discussed it, is Carolina. You know, we talked about Alak last week and his struggles there. We talked about him maybe not being a fit there because of all the rush chances they give up and because he's more of an end zone, like his strengths are end zone play. And style-wise, I could see Fleury fitting there. He's got experience. They've got a young team. And certainly there's a familiarity there with Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh, now as the general manager, and the guy who, you know, signed and won a cup with Cam Ward. And as much as a lot of people might think, hey, Eddie Lack's going to be going the other way, don't be surprised if there were some type of deal. I mean, they made a deal at the deadline with Ron Hainsey. They've dealt with each other in the past. There's a strong relationship there. And I think that's one of the reasons that we kind of keep hearing these quiet rumblings about Marc-Andre Fleury maybe ending up with the Hurricanes. And the one thing people have to remember is Pittsburgh needs to bring a goalie back for the expansion draft. This isn't just about, hey, if they have Fleury, they have to protect him because of his no move. If they move Fleury, they need another goalie in the organization to expose because they don't have anyone else eligible right now. Their other young guys aren't qualified for the draft, and they would have to expose Matt Murray even after moving Marc-Andre Fleury unless they bring a guy back. So in Carolina, you could bring back a guy like Ward, who has only 1 year left on his contract, who makes, you know, 2.4 less a year on the cap compared to Fleury, and save some money. So whether it's Ward or whether it's Lack, don't rule out that possibility that Marc-Andre Fleury ends up in Carolina.
Well, yeah, it's lost, because to me, I look at Pittsburgh. I think if they're going to try to make a trade, or like Fleury could just put his hand down and say, "I'm not waving my dude. You guys are going to have to get rid of Murray, right? If they had to, because he has the no movement clause, right?"
So well, and then they got to, and then that's the interesting one, because if that happens, and you've seen how good Fleury's been now, like, you know, I know it hasn't been a great year, but you see, once he knew he was staying, like, I don't think it's a coincidence. We've talked about Mason. In Philadelphia, you know, he gets a contract, or when it's just him and not Neuvirth, how good he is. Once he knew he was staying in Pittsburgh, he's been great these past few games. So he controls his fate, and he could really throw a curveball at the Penguins. I don't get the sense that that's what he's going to do, but you're right. And then they'd be in a situation where maybe they cut a deal with Vegas not to take Matt Murray. They agree to expose somebody else that's enticing to Vegas and give them an asset. But he would really have them over a barrel because they would still have to find a goalie to expose. They can't go into the expansion draft. Even if you cut a deal with Vegas that you're not going to take Mac, well, I guess if you would just expose him and cut a deal that they don't have to take him. So that's a possibility. You know, I think we've seen other teams going. There's been a belief that teams, like we talked about Philadelphia, can just go acquire a goalie to expose after the season, you know, somebody else's third stringer and just expose them. But there's still a risk. Just as Marc-Andre Fleury could put his hand up and say, I'm not going, those teams could say, you know, to a team like the Penguins, well, you know, what are you willing to give us for our third stringer? And start to play hardball because there is a real clock on needing to make that move before the expansion draft.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, in Calgary, suddenly both goalies are playing lights out in Johnson and Elliott. Yeah, I don't know if either one's that good, but I don't know if they were as bad as they were earlier in the year. What difference are you seeing in both of them?
Well, I mean, let's start. I mean, for Johnson, I think he was good earlier in the year, right? Maybe had a little bit of a dip there in the past couple of months. But you know, when I talked to him when he came through town, he felt like he didn't feel like his game had changed. He didn't feel like anything was off. He just felt like, you know, he was getting some bounces and they were giving up some looks that were bleeding him some goals. But I think overall he's been pretty good this season. Elliott's the more interesting case because I told you, you know, early this season when you asked me which one was surprised, I wasn't surprised by Johnson's success, but I was surprised by Elliott's struggles. And I do think that in his case there's a couple factors. Hey, he's a new dad, and a lot of things changed in his life. He'd been in St. Louis for years. He was comfortable there on and off the ice. But more than anything else, he was comfortable in the system. And he plays what we call an inside-out game, where he starts, you know, kind of like we talked about with Lack and like we talked about with Lundqvist. He doesn't stay on the goal line, but he works from a deeper positioning, makes his reads, and takes ice. Again, inside-out, from the goal line out. And so early this season, behind a new team with a new system, and let's not forget, that was a team that struggled with a new coach and a new system early this season. They struggled in their defensive zone coverage, and Elliott was playing most of those games, so it really snowballed quickly in a bad way for him. When he struggles with his reads, and when he doesn't make confident reads, because he's starting from a deeper position, and because he plays a very low, wide style, even though he's 6'2", he doesn't always play 6'2" because he kind of, again, a little lower in his stance and his feet really spread out wide. If he doesn't make that confident read and push up towards the top of the crease when he reads the pass across in a clear shot, if he's not trusting it's coming from there, he ends up making himself pretty small. And you saw earlier this season where not only did he get caught sort of deep, but he got kind of, rather than being confident out to the top of and the edge of his crease at least, which is what you're seeing now and what they've really focused on with goaltending coach Jordan Singleton, earlier in the year, he would sort of get stuck halfway and almost drift a little back and just spread himself out so wide that, you know, when that final pass or final move came, he couldn't make that confident push because his legs were already sort of, you know, again, out so wide. You think of it as a T push. You know, if you're standing over top of your skate, you make a nice strong push. You got lots of power. But the further out you get, the more on your edges and the more spread out you get, the less power you have to push. You sort of get locked in. And so he was drifting. He was deep, and he was spread out a lot early this season. And you saw him end up quite often just on his belly with guys kind of skating the puck around him. Which, you know, hey, defensive zone coverage plays a role, but I think that was just him not being able or being confident in trusting his reads, and that was the result.
Vasilevsky's numbers have really shot up without Bishop. Obviously, that's huge for them. Did you expect that?
No, I'd be lying if I said I expected it. Do we know he was capable of it? Absolutely. But he was given an opportunity to play more this year with Ben Bishop, and, you know, he ran a little hot and cold. And there's no question the potential of Vasilevsky. I mean, he has the physical tools to be as good as anyone in the league. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, the flexibility, the mobility, the work we know he puts into his game, the discipline he has off the ice in the summers. He works with a couple guys I know in Ottawa in the summers. And the skills are there, Jason, for him to be an elite number one goaltender. But he's a young guy. And he'd shown flashes of it, but he'd struggled with consistency. And it's interesting, again, that we had some really great things to say about Ben Bishop. Is I believe he called him his big American brother and the role he played in sort of guiding him. And yet, you know, whether it's, we can never see what's between the ears. And as soon as it was his job to roll with, and you remove sort of the pressures of, well, you know, we've got another guy. If you don't play well, we'll put him in. Not that they were saying that to him, but that's there. He's been exceptional. And a really interesting decision, I thought, and a really wise decision, I thought, tonight in Tampa Bay to not play him. In the midst of a playoff run, I think they're 4 points out. They recognize coming off games, I think, either Thursday and Saturday or Friday and Sunday. Oh, sorry, Thursday and Saturday, that with back-to-back tonight in New York and then tomorrow, and I can't remember off the top of my head who they're playing tomorrow, rather than just keep running this kid out there, they liked the rhythm he had playing every 2 or 3 days, and they weren't going to disrupt that. So they go with Budaj tonight, and they bring Vasilevskiy back tomorrow. You know, and you could argue, hey, does that mean Vasilevskiy is playing behind the tired team in the second end of back-to-back, and normally that's not what you do to your number one? Yeah, maybe you could argue that. But I think with Budaj in behind a fresh team, you're kind of – Vasilevskiy has the ability to steal a game tomorrow night. And you give him that opportunity while also being very cognizant and aware of the fact that this is new to him, that he does need time working with his goalie coach in between his starts, and that if you rush him too much or if you play him or overplay him like we saw when Bishop was hurt earlier this year, you can get diminishing returns. So a brave decision by John Cooper to, you know, basically sit out tonight against the New York Rangers, one of the hottest goalies in the league over the past couple of weeks, with a playoff run on the line, but recognizing that all the signs to this date point that you will get a better performance out of him in the future if you don't play him too much right now.
Yeah, he's got Ottawa tomorrow night. Then they got Toronto on Thursday, Washington, right. Then Arizona. So, you know what? The Bolts have slowly crept back in that playoff race out in the Eastern Conference. Now, a few other things. What'd you think of Devan Dubnyk? Didn't make a save, allowed 2 goals on 2 shots, and then Bruce Boudreau gave him the yank. Now, it was like a real early start time, like I think 11:30, and they were saying basically with daylight saving time changes, it felt like 10:30 to a lot of players. You think it was the coach just saying, okay, you know what, maybe this guy's not used to playing this early. He's our savior. Let's just get him out. What do you think?
You know what? I haven't had a chance to talk to Devan since it happened. I read some of his quotes in the paper, so I don't have anything directly. There is a history there. Despite as good as he's been in Minnesota, he struggled against the Chicago Blackhawks. What I would be worried about, what I don't like, is when a guy who's been as big a part of that team as he has and has been the big a part of their season gets yanked so fast. And those were two pretty good looks that Minnesota gave up early in that game to Chicago. And, Boudreau said he didn't feel like he was seeing the puck very well. So he said it wasn't just the two saves, but it was on the 2 goals, but the third save even, he said he just didn't feel like he was seeing the puck very well in his eyes. And I guess what I worry about is when Bruce Boudreau tries to play goalie coach a little bit. I guess I worry because last year in Anaheim, and I get to say this because I called it, he started the wrong goaltender in John Gibson ahead of Frederick Anderson, and it arguably cost them that series, because Gibson wasn't good early, and Anderson gave them a chance the rest of the way, but he came in an 0-2 hole. We hear a lot about Bruce Boudreau and playoff failures after great regular seasons, and so you can't help but sort of wonder if it's the right thing to sit your Vezina Trophy candidate, after 5 minutes, after 2 goals, after 3 shots against a team you might see in the first round of the playoffs. If do you start to play into some of those perceptions about Dubnyk's struggles against the Chicago Blackhawks? You're not giving your guy a chance to bounce back in that game, because Minnesota as a team bounced back, but weren't able to, Kemper ends up taking the loss after giving up the 2 late goals. Would Dubnyk have had a better chance once the team found their legs? So, on the surface, one decision, it is what it is. It was a rough start. But when I look at the types of goals, when I look at the reasoning behind it, when I look at the history of sort of starting to change things up late in the season, and he pulled Kemper in just the game before and played his Vezina Trophy candidate coming in cold in the third period. which again just seems like a strange decision for a team that's in the position it's in to start messing with things in weird ways, especially when it involves your goaltender late in the season. And so the spotlight's going to be on them, and the spotlight's going to be on Boudreaux for how they perform in the playoffs. And heaven forbid after this that it turns out to be it's unlikely to be a first round, more likely to be second round, but the way that division is, if it were to turn out to be a first round matchup for the Minnesota Wild against the Blackhawks.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, Gibson's hurt again in Anaheim. And I say again because it's been kind of a frequent thing for him early in his career. Bernier they have as a backup. Many wondered, well, maybe they should have got Ryan Miller. And because of this injury now, I'm sure it might come to the forefront more. But do you think Bernier can hold them in? And how long do you think Gibson's out? What are you hearing?
Well, I haven't heard anything in terms of how long Gibson's out. But I would suggest it's worrisome, not just because of the history. And he has had a tendency to come up with these lower body injuries. And I can't say I'm surprised. He plays the game a lot on instinct. There's a lot of reaching. There's a lot of extension. You know, his sort of technical development as a pro, as good as he is relying on instinct, you worry if it puts too much pressure, you know, on his body. And there's a history there. And so he was hurt when they went on their five-day break, which coincided with the trade deadline. And I thought they might look for some insurance because Bernier, after a great start to this season, had really struggled. And it just felt like, you know, a veteran presence like Ryan Miller, who has been exceptional behind a very lousy Canucks team of late, especially in their own end. I don't know if you saw it on Saturday night against the Penguins, but it was a goaltending clinic to even keep that game close for most of it. I kind of thought that was a no-brainer move, but I got to give Jonathan Bernier credit. He was very good early this season. They stuck with Gibson at times ahead of him, even when he was outperforming Gibson. And again, we talk about mental. You wonder what that does to a guy. He struggled in sporadic starts for a while there. But, I mean, second star of the week in the NHL this week, at a time when they need him with Gibson out again, he seems to have found his groove. And I watched parts of their game the other night, and I really liked his patience, his positioning, he looked good. He looked sort of like the Bernier that we all expected coming out of Los Angeles that never really established himself in Toronto. So, you know, he's capable of getting on these runs. I still could make the argument that Miller would have been a better insurance policy for them behind Gibson. But I also get that they've done everything in their power since trading Freddie Anderson to make sure there's no questions about who their number one goaltender is in Anaheim, that it is John Gibson. And I guess this is part of it. So at the very least, you're thankful if you're the Ducks that Bernier has sort of found his groove and found his rhythm right now, because if Gibson struggles continue with the lower body injury right into the postseason, and I've got nothing to suggest they will, but if they creep up again, at least you've got Bernier playing well going into it, as opposed to what they had midway through the season, which just didn't look like they had any confidence in him.
Kevin, one quick last one for you as a goalie.
Yeah.
Did you see the flurry? Was that a trip on McDavid? Should it have been a penalty?
Oh, I got to be honest.
I didn't see it?
I'm playing through the high. This is the poke check.
Yeah, I poke checked him and tripped him, yeah, in overtime.
You know what? I'm kind of got a few things going through my head in terms of plays with flurry over the last couple games, but as far as I'm concerned, if there's a poke check attempt involved, then it's pretty rare you see a tripping call on the goaltender. I mean, if the puck's involved and there's any type of play on it, as a goaltender, we will absolutely make sure, especially if we miss the puck, that we take the skates, or as a guy goes by us after a shot, and they skate through our stick, we'll give it a tug to make sure that guy isn't tapping things into an open net. But honestly, it's just such a rare call that I'm not surprised at all it doesn't get made.
Appreciate it, man. Talk to you soon.
Did I sit on the fence well enough on that one?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I know. It's like, yeah, I know. I'm going to have to pull them out after we get off the phone.